the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. This and other great health talk shows at RadioMD.com. Here are Joe Galewski and Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
It's another radio show that helps you take control of your genes to become the world expert on your body. We're glad you're here. This is you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with Dr. Michael Roizen. He's the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. Thank you for listening today. I'm Joe Galewski. Bridget's here today. Reach Dr. Mike on the phone anytime you like by calling this number, 877-711-5211, 877-711-5211. You can email your questions or comments to youdocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com, and you may listen to us. An alternate way to listen to us, I shouldn't say it's an alternate way, it's a great way to listen to us on iHeartRadio Talk. You can add Radio MD or you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, to what's called the Daily Pulse on iHeartRadio Talk. That's a special news and update section that you can customize. So download it, download the app, or use it on your computer, on the web. If you're on your computer, click Talk in the main menu and search for You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. And if I haven't said it again, thanks a lot for listening today. Hello, Dr. Mike Roizen.
Hello, Joe.
Tell us about our guest.
There's a great set of stories this week, just great medical information this week, and a sensational guest.
Yeah, tell us about the guest. Who's joining us at 35 minutes after the hour?
Well, the guest is Matthew Hertenstein. And I may be mispronouncing it, but he's written a sensational book called The Tell, T-E-L-L, The Little Clues That Reveal Big Truths About Who We Are, such as, how do you choose your mate? What is it that gets you to choose your mate? What is it that makes men attractive or women attractive? Why are meetings, we're going to ask him this question, and in fact, why are in-person meetings so important? We'll find out a lot about what he says and what the science says about why first impressions really do matter.
Like, how can you be better at telling if somebody's lying to you or not, right? They always say it's in the eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm on, as you know, I'm away from Cleveland today. So I'm on location in sunny city, Joe, and I won't tell you that I'm near a golf course to make you envious, but I am.
Well, good for you. I'm happy for you. I'm winking my eye. Even Bridget's someplace away from our friendly studios, too, right? You're someplace else?
Yeah. I'm closer to Sonar now. I'm in Florida.
Oh, I'm happy for you, too.
Thank you, though. I can feel your positive energy.
One of our big stations is in Tampa.
Yep.
And so that's real near where Bridget is.
So maybe I'll have a really clear signal tonight.
Just want to let you know I went to a famous, well-known, successful steakhouse here last night in Syracuse and had salmon. How about that?
Wow, is that a third time in a row?
Yeah, I just can't eat steak at a steakhouse anymore. Something about it. I just prefer to have the fish, and it's done pretty well, so.
And it does taste great, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've liked it. Liked it all along. What are some of there's some ways to eat fresh during the winter? One of the stories we have on the sheet here today: four ways to eat fresh during the winter. What's that all about?
Bridge, I'm going to let you take that one.
Okay. So it can be difficult in places like Cleveland to eat fresh during the winter. So the best way that you can do it is to take produce when it's in season in the summer and freeze it. Buy it in bulk and then freeze it. Dry freeze in your freezer so that you can eat it at peak nutritional value all year round. And that's the main way that I do it.
Okay.
And the other, of course, there are two other ways that I like. One is there are always things that are in season. So right now you can get citrus from Florida or California. And the other, so buy things that are in season, tangerines, lemons, oranges, grapefruit, et cetera. The second way of them, pears actually, too. The second way that I like, in addition to Bridget's way, is to actually buy frozen berries at the store. So buying frozen, they have kept more nutritional value often than carting them than they have when you cart them across the country. So that's one great way of, in fact, doing it is buying berries frozen, and you can buy them. I buy them at some of the big box stores, and they're really excellent, and they're really low priced.
And another option is to join a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and they'll be providing local fresh produce from the farms that they're affiliated with year-round. So that would be also a good way of even just knowing which foods are in season, because the CSA usually has them in stock.
What is that again? CSA? Those are the letters?
Yeah. It stands for Community Supported Agriculture.
Okay, all right.
So you can, even if you just look up CSAs near you, they usually deliver the produce to a parking lot at a local church or something, and then you can go and pick it up every week, and then you have fresh produce that's from local farms within the area.
What are microgreens? Go ahead, Mike.
I should say we even do that at the Cleveland Clinic at a number of our family health centers. We have CSA year-round, and there are some winter vegetables, fruits, and root vegetables, etc., that or even grown inside in a greenhouse that are delivered during CSA year-round.
It's a great way to know that you're going to have more nutritional value, but also that you're supporting local farms in your area.
What are microgreens, and should we be eating microgreens? Anybody?
Microgreens are the small leaves, often in early beet formation, or parsley is another one. So they're small leaves that usually contain maybe 2 to 4 times the nutritional value as large ones. So parsley is a great example of something that's small, that's green, and that is just enjoyable as heck to eat, because you get a lot of the good nutrients with it. So that's one of the choices, if you will.
How about this story before the break? We'll go to some other top medical stories of the week. The connection between eating an apple and heart attacks.
Well, this is a very interesting one. So on the Christmas issue of the British Medical Journal, they always do things that are pop culture. And I don't know if we're going to have enough. Oh, yeah, we'll have enough time to get this in. And the pop culture this year was, instead of taking a statin drug, what happens if everyone in Great Britain over the age of 18 ate an apple a day? What would that do? And eating an apple a day would have the same effect at decreasing heart attacks and strokes as all the people who were indicated for taking a statins would do that. Now, it's assumed, the authors assume that 70% of the people will continue with the statin. That is, there's a 30% dropout rate with medications. And they assumed there was a 30% dropout rate with the apple. So they gave equal weight to both, and they said an apple a day, based on the data they have, will have as great a benefit as having a statin for those people it's indicated for in the new guidelines that were out last week that we talked about, or last couple weeks ago that we talked about on the show.
All right, we'll be back with some of the other top medical stories of the week coming up. After the break, don't forget our guest at 35 minutes after the hour. He's an associate professor of psychology, and his book is called The Tell, The Little Clues That Reveal Big Truths About Who We Are. 877-711-5211 on the telephone, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. Coming up after the break, if you're pre-diabetic, how many steps a day could possibly cut your heart attack risk? And black women are losing less weight than white women on the same diet. We'll explain that, or Mike will explain more about that. And some of the top supermarket trends that are coming up in 2014. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. This is Radio MD. Thanks for listening, and stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
You still rely on sugar or caffeine for energy? B12 is known as the energy vitamin. It nourishes your body, supporting mental function and vitality. Problem is, B12 is hard to absorb. Did you know a recent study showed almost 4 out of 10 people had B12 levels in the low normal to deficiency range? This applied to both young and old, even those with adequate meat intake. So, it isn't just vegans or older folks who need to be concerned. Until now, the alternative was getting a shot at the doctor's office. What if we had a B12 offer that was simple? Liposomes deliver B12 painlessly, no doctor visit. Why not discover what B12 can offer you? Drink the new liposomal form. Right now, you can get a bottle for 50% off at B12offer.com. This limited time B12 offer is unique and it's easy. Just go to B12offer.com for 50% off. That's B12offer.com.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. The U.S. is experiencing an increase in the number of cases of whooping cough. This is a serious illness caused by pertussis bacteria. It often starts with what seems like a common cold. Then, especially for toddlers, the cough worsens and leads to the characteristic whoop sound on inhaling. During this phase of the illness, which usually lasts more than 2 weeks, the child can get short of breath and the skin around the mouth may turn blue. Older children may cough so hard they vomit. The illness can be particularly deadly for infants who can develop complications such as pneumonia and seizures. Whooping cough is highly contagious and can spread to children who have not been vaccinated. The best way to prevent this dangerous illness is to be sure your child received all doses of the pertussis vaccine. This is usually given as the DTaP vaccine. And for more information on preventing whooping cough, visit www.cisp.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Coming up at 35 after the hour, the little clues that reveal big truths about who we are at 35 past the hour. That's our guest segment. It's You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen, brought to you weekly by YouBeauty.com and Morning and Night Multivitamins. Dr. Mike, something else interesting in that holiday Christmas issue of the British Medical Journal?
Yeah, you know, this is an issue that everyone thought was straightforward, was rigorous science, and it is, but they always make it top issues. So about 10 years ago, they came out with a really interesting issue, which was science, but it talked about orgasm frequency and longevity. So they followed a large cohort of men in Great Britain to look at what happened, how many orgasms they had, and they followed their significant others or their spouses, and orgasm frequency and longevity. And they found the average man in Great Britain, much like in the United States, who was 55, between 50 and 60, had about an orgasm a week, 58 a year. Those that had as many as 160, which is roughly three times the national average, lived about 8 years longer and had less disability. And they did not count orgasms in the spouses. In the females, they counted happiness with sexual life, and they had about the same benefit. And obviously, the guys then extrapolated like an apple a day for 10 years and extrapolated the same way they did in the apple story and found out that if the men had had 60 orgasms a year, they would be on average the equivalent of 16 years younger. So it's something to shoot for, Joe.
I have a lot of catching up to do if that's the case, then. I'm a few eons behind.
But the 58 is the average, Joe.
Well, I still have some catching up to do.
You can make up for it by eating
her. Is your wife not listening to the show today?
Oh, goodness. On a related matter, the first season of Masters of Sex ended on Showtime this week. Interesting, Masters and Johnson. It's interesting. I'm not really sure how accurate the historical relationship was or historically what that was. It's an interesting field, and they did a pretty good job of it. Again, I'm not really sure how accurate it was, but. It's up for all sorts of awards and everything. I think they're coming back for a second season, but those two pretty much pioneered a lot of information that we didn't know prior to what they came out with about human sexuality, didn't they?
That's exactly right. I think they did the work in the late 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And by the time they published it in the 70s, the early 70s, it was remarkable work, remarkable. And part of the humor I get from the work, but it was solid scientifically, is we had an article, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I don't know if we got to discuss it, but it was Sex as Exercise.
Yeah, we didn't do it, no.
And the interesting thing was that they found, this is whatever it is, 50 years later, almost the same thing, that the average amount of energy expenditure during an orgasm is between 25 and 50 calories. It's not very much exercise. It's about 2 minutes of riding a bicycle or a treadmill for both men and women.
Yeah, it was a well-done series, and there was some sex in it, some experimentation, some of the things that they made these couples do, but it was done tastefully, really done very well. A lot of relationship building between a lot of the people in the show, so it was very well done, and it might win some awards and be back for a second season. Long-term multivitamin use, some say taking vitamins, Dr. Mike, is pretty much useless. And we talked about this on my morning show, I think, this week, but what's the details?
We should not throw what I call the baby out with the bathwater. So there were two things that were really studied. One, does it decrease cardiovascular disease? And the answer was no, and there hadn't been any real hints that it had done that. And in well-nourished men, that is physicians who were exercising, who had a very low rate of cigarette use, under 2%, it didn't change their cognitive function as they got older. Now, they had two major caveats on that. One is none of these people, they were tested for vitamin deficiency. None of them had it. So you can't have a vitamin D or B12 deficiency, which are common ones, or even an iodine deficiency. And the second thing is, obviously, this is they did not look at cancer rates. And from previous studies, there was a 8% over age 50, 18% reduction in cancers over age 70 reduction from routine multivitamin use. So if you don't think 18% reduction in cancer rates is something, I do anyway. So that was in men, not in women. The second thing that I don't want people to think is that prenatal multivitamins aren't useful. No, prenatal and during, even for 3 months beforehand, and as you know, I say that that means every woman between 12 and 50, since 50% of the pregnancies in the United States, in North America really, are unplanned, and you want it 3 months in advance because that decreases autism rates by 40%, decreases all congenital malformations by 85%, and decreases childhood cancers to age 6.5 by 65%. So there is a true benefit for women under the age of 50, between 12 and 50, taking a multivitamin a day. As you know, I believe it should be half in the morning and half at night because you will urinate out the water-soluble components in 12 hours. So you want a stable level, which means half a multivitamin in the morning, half in the evening. And over the age of 50, you really want DHA plus lutein and zeaxanthine. Lutein, zeaxanthine, and DHA protect the eyes and decrease age-related macular degeneration. So maybe in women between the ages of 50 and whatever, maybe 80, you don't need a multivitamin, but we don't really know that. The other thing that came out of study is that there was no harm from having a multivitamin, if you will, and they're pretty inexpensive insurance against an inadequate diet, Joe.
I think the thing I mentioned to you on the morning show last week was I think it's like when people take cholesterol drugs or high blood pressure pills, it's a way to say, well, I can eat anything I want because I'm taking a statin for my cholesterol. I'm taking a blood pressure pill for my blood pressure. People may say, well, I'm taking a multivitamin, so I can just about, you know, eat anything I want rather than opt for the healthy lifestyle. I think that's the only thing I mentioned. People may consider it to be a false sense of security, right?
That's exactly right. You don't want to have a, you don't want to, it's not a false, it's not something you should say, because I'm doing this, I don't have to pay attention. I can eat just, you know, fried French fries all day for the rest of my life. No, you still want to eat healthy food, which is basically a Mediterranean diet, without red meat, without saturated fat, without, trans fat, without added sugars, without added syrups, and it's only 100% whole grain. But if you do that, you can do pretty well with that without the multivitamin.
All right, coming up, guest time after the break. It's the little clues that reveal big truths about who we are and who people we deal with are. It's called The Tell, and the author of the book is coming up on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
My story may help you. This is what happened. I was talking to my best friend. I told her I wasn't feeling like myself. I had pain in my pelvic area and bleeding that wasn't normal for me. Since it had gone on for a couple of weeks, my friend said I had to go to the doctor. Of course, she was right. Turned out I had uterine cancer, a type of gynecologic cancer. To make a long story short, by realizing something might be wrong and seeing my doctor right away, I received treatment. Now, we're confident I'll be fine. Please, please listen to your body. If something doesn't feel right for 2 weeks or longer, see your doctor.
Uterine, cervical, ovarian, vaginal, and vulvar cancers are all gynecologic cancers. Signs and symptoms are not the same for everybody. So get the facts. Get the inside knowledge. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO to learn more.
Knowing can make all the difference in the world. It did for me.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi there, I'm Juliana Rancic.
And I'm Bill Rancic.
I love my job as an entertainment reporter, but what I love even more now is being a new mom.
And you are a great mom.
Thanks, honey. I'm very proud of you.
Thanks. Like any responsible parent, Juliana and I wanted the best for our little son, Duke, and that includes a healthy future. We know firsthand that life is pretty unpredictable. We didn't anticipate getting Juliana's cancer diagnosis or even having challenges with pregnancy. I don't think anyone does. But as parents, we can plan for the unexpected.
That's why we want to share our decision to bank Duke's cord blood when he was born. The blood in a newborn's umbilical cord contains millions of young, valuable stem cells that are used to treat childhood conditions like cancers and blood diseases and are being studied as potential therapies for cerebral palsy and even autism.
Julianne and I are proud to partner with Cord Blood Registry and the Healthy Futures Campaign to help raise awareness about the value of cord blood and the options for saving or donating it.
We encourage you to take action for your family's healthy future. Go to parentsguidecordblood.org to learn more.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him opening his own clothing store at the age of 18? 1 in 138,000. Excited to be a part of pop culture, he packed for the big city. The odds of finding someone to invest in his vision? 1 in 4.5 million. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
If you've missed a show, the full audio library is at RadioMD.com. And now back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Thank you for listening today. I'm Joe Galuski. Dr. Mike Royson is here. What does a yearbook photo have to do with future marital success, or for that matter, divorce? Can a CEO's appearance tell you anything about a company's quarterly earnings? And how to get along in life by just making the right decisions? Matthew Hertenstein is an associate professor of psychology at DePauw University, and his book is called The Tell, The Little Clues That Reveal Big Truths About Who We Are, and it's published by Basic Books. Hey, Professor, thanks for coming on. Dr. Mike is here, too. Let me ask you, the book, how is, in general terms, how is the information in this book applicable to our lives we live every day?
Yeah, great question. Well, you know, essentially, a lot of books lately have kind of told us where we go wrong, how our minds are biased and whatnot. And that's true in many cases. But with this book, I kind of wanted to show people where we actually go right, at least oftentimes, and how we, you know, we're told not to judge a book by its cover, so to speak. We're not told not to judge people by, you know, looking at them. But it turns out that scientists are doing studies over the last 10, 20 years showing us that we're pretty accurate in a lot of cases, and we should give ourselves a little bit more credit.
Now, the book briefly is called The Tell. What's that mean, The Tell?
Well, I take the title off of the idea of a poker tell, you know, the nonverbal behaviors or how people hold their cards in poker and that it gives away something about their card, something about their hand. And in the same way, all of us give away signals to other people, and we can pick up on those signals as well from others, and that reveals something about who they are, be it their personality or what they'll be like in the future or something about their relationships or whatnot.
That's pretty cool. Here's Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike.
Matthew, thanks for coming on. I found this fascinating, and a number of the reasons for that I found it fascinating relate to our current technology. And more we're trying to do meetings via, if you will, internet capability. We're showing internet screens to others and talking on the phone. And it seems to me this gives away or does not take advantage of a lot of verbal cues. What do you think about that? And should we be doing all of our meetings in person?
You know, that's something I speculate about in the book a little bit at the end, actually, is the role that technology will play. And I think about it in a couple of ways. Number one, I mean, you think about children being raised today, and how their lives and their communication with their friends and family members is vastly different than what it was for me when I was growing up. So I wonder, you know, what is the impact of that on their ability to read other people's cues and be able to perceive that? And you know, scientists, we don't have an answer to that, but I suspect that it's going to play a role. And then, you know, even for adults who have kind of come into the electronic age, digital native or digital immigrants, I should say, so to speak, like myself, you know, I think it probably does have an impact. It probably, you know, dulls our ability to perceive others' cues and whatnot and make predictions. But at the same time, I still think we're pretty darn good at it.
Well, you know, the thing that I have seen is I feel I get a lot better responses and a lot better, patient following of the plans we agree on when I'm looking directly at the patient rather than looking at the electronic medical record and trying to type. And one of the things we're doing in medicine relating to that is we're using scribes. So the scribe takes notes while I'm talking to the patient and the patient's talking to me. But I can be focusing on the patient and read their body language and a lot of their verbal cues of whether they, when they agree to something, whether they're really agreeing to it or when they suggest something, whether they're just suggesting it because they think it's socially acceptable and I'll enjoy it or I'll accept it versus they'll really do it. And so I think it's actually very pertinent for that as well as a lot of the examples you give. We should cite some of the examples because this is really a wonderful book. And just for people, it's called The Tell. And it's by Matthew, is it Hertenstein, Hertenstein? How do you pronounce that?
Right, it's Hertenstein, actually. Hertenstein,
and it's published by Basic Books. It's available at Amazon.com. So one of the things you talk about is how men and women pick mates. Do you want to expand on that rather than my asking questions about what you wrote?
Sure. And just to back up for just a minute, if you don't mind, one of the things I do talk about in the book a little bit is that patient-physician relationship a little bit. And there's actually evidence that patients will sort of be more likely to comply with doctors' treatment plans, you know, take the medicine or whatnot, if the physician is sort of enthusiastic and empathic to that person. And of course, that emotional communication is central to that of what you were talking about. So I just wanted to map onto a little bit about what you said. In terms of mating, evolutionary psychologists have been really interested in, you know, men and women and why we choose each other and who we choose and whatnot, and as well as relationships and marriage. And so, you know, I talk a lot about relationships in my book, The Tell. And one of the interesting things that's come out of this is that we can predict the success of relationships or lack thereof, and in some way. So for example, there's one researcher at the University of Washington named John Gottman who can observe engaged couples talking about something that's, you know, a difficult issue in their relationship, be it sex or money or future in-laws or whatnot. And within about observing them for about 3 minutes, he and his team can predict with about 92% accuracy who's going to get divorced or who's going to stay married before they even get married. So it's pretty amazing that we can pick up on these nonverbal cues. And I did some studies, too, looking at yearbook photos, and that actually predicts divorce as well.
Other than just telling us that, give us I can ask you questions, but one of the things you talk about is symmetry and smiling. Go and expand on the smiling in the yearbook photos, would you?
Yeah, sure. So we did this really really interesting study where we looked at college yearbook photos, and we coded the degree to which people smiled in their photos. And specifically, we look at two muscles, one that pulls up the lip corners of your mouth, of course, to make you smile. But then there's the other muscle that surrounds your eye. And this muscle is called the orbicularis oculi, if you're interested. And this muscle is very difficult to contract voluntarily. Only about 10% of people can do it.
We call it the corner of the eye muscle.
Yeah, corner of the eye muscle. I like that. that gives you those crow's feet, you know, when you smile, and it gives you those little lines on the sides of your eyes. And so we coded those two muscles and looked to see how intensely they were contracted, and we found that the people who smiled least in their college yearbook photos were actually about 5 times more likely to get a divorce at some point in their life compared to those who smiled the most. And we followed up this study with another one where we looked at childhood photos, taking all kinds of different photos, you know, be it, you know, blowing out candles at the birthday cake, opening up a present during the holidays or whatnot. And the average age at which these photos was taken was about 10 years old. And we found the same exact trend. Those people who smiled least were more likely to get divorced compared to those who smiled most. In that study. So a pretty interesting study.
We'll pick up on that. Okay, Mike, you want to do it? I'll do it. You do it?
No, you do it.
Okay, Matthew Hertenstein. His book is called The Tell, The Little Cues That Reveal Big Truths About Who We Are. More with our guest after the break on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Is your skin aging before your eyes? There is something you can do to reverse those signs of aging. I'm plastic surgeon Dr. Arthur Perry, and my solution doesn't involve a knife or a needle. It's a serum I created called Nighttime. Nighttime makes your skin smoother, brighter, and thicker with just one step each day. I've packed Nighttime with vitamin C and A, moisturizers, fruit acids, skin brighteners, and antioxidants. That's a lot of science in one bottle. But that's what it takes to make your skin look younger and more attractive. Until Labor Day, when you purchase 2 bottles of Nighttime, you'll get a 3rd bottle free with free shipping. Call 855-940-1800. That's 855-940-1800, or on the web, it's drperrys.com. That's drperrys.com. Put the word Radio MD in the discount box to receive 3 bottles of Nighttime for the price of 2.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission: to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together, we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Kids often test parental limits and rules, and sometimes parents decide enough is enough. That's when a timeout may be effective. Timeouts stop children from getting attention after they misbehave. Timeouts work best for children between the ages of 2 and 5, but can be effective for kids as old as 10 in some cases. A rule of thumb is 1 minute of timeout for every year of your child's age. For example, a 4-year-old would get a 4-minute timeout. Some guidelines for a timeout. Give the timeout immediately after the unacceptable behavior so your child knows why she's being disciplined. Explain clearly why the behavior was unacceptable. Calmly place your child in a quiet, boring, but secure place. If she gets up, quietly explain that her timeout isn't over and return her to her seat. When it is over, wipe the slate clean and remember to praise your child each time and every time she shows acceptable behaviors. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Matthew Hertenstein, his book is called The Tell, The Little Clues That Reveal the Big Truths About Who We Are. It's published by Basic Books. You should read it. And here again is Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike.
Now, Matthew, in The Tell, you tell about the corners of the eyes on those yearbook photos in addition to just the smile. So it's a real smile versus a put on smile. Go and expand on that a little bit, would you?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of research has shown over the last couple of decades that when people will smile with that muscle around their eyes, in addition to the one that pulls up their lip corners, it's more of a genuine smile. And we see differences in how the brain lights up in terms of showing more genuine smiling. People report feeling more genuine joy when that eye muscle contracts. And like I said, people can't do it voluntarily for the most part. Only about 10% of people can. So, you know, if you tell a joke, for example, and you see somebody smile at you and they don't contract that muscle around their eyes, but they do smile nonetheless, that probably means they don't really find your joke all that funny, honestly, because it's not a genuine smile. They're just, you know, being polite to you to show you that smile, so to speak. So that muscle around the eyes really makes a difference in terms of how people feel and experience it, even physiologically in the brain.
So when you look at it on your yearbook, and we're going to ask about Facebook as well, but when you look at it on the yearbook, what you really want to do is see that the corner of the eye smile, and that's who you want to, if you're looking for a mate, you want to look at that yearbook photo to see whether it's likely you're going to stay married. Is that because it reveals that they have a sense of humor and it's necessary to have a sense of humor in any compromising, long-term compromising, meaning a relationship where you've got to compromise a lot, which is what you have to do with marriage, or is there some other reason?
Yeah, well, our study definitely shows that you can predict marital stability from the smile, but it doesn't answer the question of why. I do have some speculations, but before I give them, I just want to say, too, this is, I think, important for listeners to know, is that I would be hesitant to, you know, on a case-by-case basis to look at people's yearbook photos Because you never know. Somebody could be having a bad day when they go ahead and have their picture taken. A specific person could, or maybe they don't feel confident about their teeth for some reason, so they don't want to smile
or whatever it might be. You did say it had a 92% prediction rate, though.
Well, that was when you're observing couples interact with each other for about three or four minutes. But for the yearbook photo study, you're right, in the sense that, you know, the people that smiled least were five times more likely. So there's definitely a relationship, but I just want to make sure that we're careful to know that these are averages looking at a lot of people. Because again, you know, I wouldn't want anybody to like not marry somebody because they weren't smiling in their yearbook photo. But to answer your question, there's a couple of candidate explanations, I think. Number one, I think people in general who smile in their photos and contract that orbicularis oculi muscle around the eye, those people, evidence shows, tend to be happier in life. There's other studies that show that. They report higher levels of well-being and whatnot. They also probably attract other happier people, right? Smiles are very powerful things in our lives. And a smile is not only a reflection of an internal state of how we feel, but they're powerful signals that affect other people. And it really, really affects their relationships. There's another study that's actually, you mentioned Facebook, where they researchers coded smiling in Facebook photos, and they found that people who did smile in their Facebook photos had a significantly greater social network, had more friends, they had more support. And so there's something about smiling in those photos that reveal that sort of thing. But, smiling is probably, you know, worn on people's faces that are more optimistic and just generally happier, and that, you know, like I said, they attract other like people. But there's other explanations. For example, one of my favorites is maybe people who smile in response to the photographer asking them to smile are more obedient, and perhaps obedience helps nurture the stability of a relationship. Who knows?
Oh, please.
I know.
Now, I should ask you, are you married?
I am married, in fact, yes.
And did you look at your wife's yearbook picture before you got married?
Well, when I married her, I hadn't done the study, so I didn't know to look at her photo. But since then, I have, and I'm happy to say that she had a huge smile on her face, thankfully. And I looked at my yearbook photos, and I smiled, but not. I wouldn't say it was a huge smile, very intense smile. So I'm glad that I married somebody that did.
Now, so she's obviously helping you along. Now, you also go into spotting autism early. I should tell you, my wife is a developmental pediatrician, and like what you said, believes that that obviously early intervention makes a difference. And that observing the child early on is very important. But tell us about what you found in the research about observation and early childhood observation and autism.
Yeah, in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been some more and more research piling up showing that, number one, the earlier you intervene in trying to treat autism, the younger child is, the more likely that a person will have success in that treatment because the brain is so plastic early on and so it can be molded by experience. So the trick, of course, and the goal is to try to identify autism as early as possible. And they are learning that we can do this earlier and earlier. And in the book I talk about, in fact, what really got me interested in this is my own son, Isaac, had some red flags for autism very early in his life. And these red flags alerted me, and as a developmental psychologist, I was kind of tuned into these. And he was showing things like, you know, not looking into our eyes. You know, he wasn't gazing into our eyes when we would look into his, which was kind of a red flag. He wouldn't babble like a lot of babies would at a certain age. He was kind of, it looked like he was in his own world a bit, you know, and he was rocking back and forth sometimes and whatnot. So he had a lot of these red flags, and it turns out that these red flags, even as young as 2 months old, one study showed recently, it was a study published last month in Nature, where the researchers found that babies who would or children who would eventually develop autism don't look into the eyes of adults nearly as often as typically developing infants, as starting as young as, like I said, 2 months old. So these are really important red flags to look at.
But I do want to tell people how good the book The Tell is, the little clues that reveal big truths about who we are. The Tell, T-E-L-L, Matthew Hertenstein, H-E-R-T-E-N-S-T-A-E-I-N, has been on with us. Sensational book, wonderful book. Thank you very much.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Mike on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
You may already take omega-3s for heart and brain health, but what most people don't realize is that DHA is really the preferred form. Did you know if you take omega-3s but your body cannot convert them into the preferred DHA form, you won't get much benefit? The ultimate DHA omega-3 would be water-soluble, so it's already in the right form for digestion. That's a game changer. It would eliminate the fish burps, be good tasting and all natural. It would be environmentally sustainable from algae oil, plus non-GMO and allergen-free. Well, I have some good news for you. Empirical Labs already invented this. And better yet, you can get a bottle right now for 50% off with a special offer at TakeOmega.com. This is the only water-soluble DHA supplement, plus it's vegan. So go to TakeOmega.com right now for a limited time savings, 50% off at TakeOmega.com. That's O-M-E-G-A. TakeOmega.com.